Call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
Now we have Neighbourhood Watch back for the first week. Joining me from Radio Adelaide, we have Zoe Cunandes, who is speaking about medical evacuations and legislation around that.
So the Medevac Bill, it's a bill that allows medical evacuations of refugees on Manus Island and Nauru, and it allows doctors to have refugees transferred to Australia for treatment. The bill was passed through the House of Representatives, which was a historical defeat for the Coalition. I think the first time in 75, 76 years that they've been defeated. And then yesterday it was passed through the Senate. So it takes about 7 to 10 days for these laws to go into fruition, but there are cases where they're called royal assents, is secured much more quickly. For example, this happened with the same-sex marriage bill. And it just depends on how quickly the Office of Parliamentary Counsel have prepared and are prepared to pursue it. Medical transfers were already available under existing laws, so they've already been happening. However, the big change with this Medivac bill is that the new law will allow doctors' diagnosis, not actually decisions of public servants, that trigger medical transfers. So they are happening, but they're just not happening with the right diligence or the right care.
Mm. And you touched on it briefly, but I did want to ask more about what the actual process would look like for someone being medically evacuated from Nauru or Manus Island.
So before the bill was passed in Senate, Labor needed some amendments to this bill. So for someone who is looking to get transferred from Manus Island for medical reasons, there will be an initial 72 hours for a minister to consider evacuations, up from 24 hours, which is the original bill. The total time frame extended up to 7 days, so you know it could take them 7 days to be medically transferred. And one of the other Labor amendments was that there will be a new character test to ensure that criminals aren't going to be, quote-unquote, criminals won't be sent to Australia. So these amendments are, you know, they put a bit of a spanner in the works, and a lot of people thought that this bill wouldn't pass due to these amendments and that Labor wasn't actually going to back the Medibac bill, but they did. So these amendments create more difficulty for these people on Manus Island and Nauru. The character test seems necessary and has had a lot of criticism from a lot of people.
I'm going to shift on to domestic violence. So more funding is being put into supporting people who are in situations of domestic violence. What does that actual legislation look like?
Yeah, so domestic violence is a really big problem in Australia. So Prime Minister Scott Morrison is committing $78 million to protect women and children against domestic violence. He announced this on Monday as a part of this, he had this speech, and the theme was keeping Australia safe. The Domestic Violence Initiative funding, so the money includes $60 million throughout the next 3 years, who will be given to grants for organisations to provide emergency accommodation and housing for people escaping this family violence, and the other $18 million will be going towards Keeping Women Safe in Their Homes program, which provides security, upgrades and safety planning for women and children who need the protection in their homes. As for the initiative, though, it has been really criticised by people in the sector. So family and violence service workers have criticised Morrison's funding, although it seems like it is a step in the right direction. Rape and Domestic Violence Services Australia executive, her name's Karen Willis, and she said the proposal was very light on detail, and it was actually a splash in the bottom of the bucket. She said, we need at least another nought added on to that. This criticism makes sense considering in 2014, Scott Morrison actually was a key figure in cutting funds to homelessness and affordable housing and finance services. You know, it could feel for these people that it's a bit too late. And this makes sense considering the rates of deaths domestic violence. One in five women have experienced sexual violence since the age of 15. 85% of women have been sexually harassed in Australia, and on average, one woman a week is being murdered by her current or former partner. These aren't new figures that we're all just finding out about. This has been happening for such a long time.
Jumping on to the war on music in New South Wales, so can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so Australian music industry figures, promoters, record labels, policy advisors have banded together to launch this campaign called Don't Kill Live Music, and it's to fight the New South Wales government's recent regulations surrounding music festivals. So in just the recent weeks, two New South Wales music festivals, Saifari and Mountain Sounds, they were cancelled by the promoters only days before they were due to begin, and they cited that this was because of government and police fees. People are kind of calling it a war on music, a war on festivals. It's also something that's been happening in New South Wales for a while. A few years ago, the Keep Sydney Open campaign. So the government recently announced that there would be liquor licence regulation fees, which will be coming into effect on March the 1st. And these are based on whether festivals are on their risk level. So depending on size type and event type, and all these things kind of come into play. And so the Don't Kill Live Music, it's trying to fight against these regulations that have all come into play. So we've had five deaths over the summer from suspected overdosing at music festivals. The government isn't even prepared to think about things like pill testing, and instead are putting these hefty fees and regulations on music festivals. The campaign Don't Kill Live Music, I just refreshed before I picked up the phone, and it was at 60,000 signatures. So it's a big deal, which the government sort of doesn't seem to realise, I think, is that a lot of these festivals are large and a lot of them would be high risk from the get-go.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.